I hope everyone is staying healthy and that the people you know are also healthy and well. And I think as, just quickly scanning, as everyone here probably knows, we've been working on the slogans, this Tibetan tradition of using slogans to help us be alive, really, to help us fully engage in our life and not be swept around by the winds of avarice, lust, greed, disappointment, despair, all those things that can kind of really push and pull us. I have been really thinking and kind of reading also about the role of slogans in our practice. Now, these are known as mind training slogans. And I think they do several things for us. One, they prod us. They prod us to acknowledge our own confusion and our own inappropriate actions, but without blame. Not like you're a bad girl, you're a bad boy. Just, I see this. And then they instruct us how to shift our views and actions to be loving, to be compassionate. In other words, they're helpful. These slogans, these mind trainings, if we take it all together, I think take us beyond the kind of warm and fuzzy thoughts about kindness that we may have, because I think we all want to be kind. But these slogans help us to really skillfully offer compassion and love and awareness to the world. So these slogans we've been talking about encourage us to take responsibility for our thoughts, our actions, and our feelings. And when we use these really skillfully, I think they can be like mirrors, reflecting back to us our present moment, while at the same time holding us firmly to our deepest intentions, our deep vows. The slogans, perhaps more than anything, are reminders that we are not victims. We're not victims of our habits or our character, but we can be agents of change. We can change and become the kind of person we wish to be. The other thing I've noticed when I kind of scan through the slogans is they don't use coercive language. And of course, they don't use blame or guilt, as I mentioned earlier. They are phrases that in a moment can help take us out of our sense of self-centeredness. Somewhat like the koans of our own traditions, they are rather pithy statements, but pointing us to a more spacious and kind of open, compassionate place. Now, during this Wednesday seminar, we really haven't covered very many of the slogans yet, because after all, there are 59 of them, and I don't think we're not even halfway through yet. But maybe you already have the sense that these slogans primarily work with emotions. When studied and I think used appropriately, the slogans help us stop engaging with our painful emotional habits. And they open our hearts, helping us to deepen our compassion for ourselves and for others. Now, there seems to be a kind of vague misconception that practices in the Buddhist tradition tend to level out or kind of work to extinguish emotions, as if emotions, being a source of suffering, need to be somehow swept away. And it is true that from the beginning, Buddhist teachings have acknowledged that chasing after emotional highs, being really happy or full of joy all the time, that will lead to suffering, as will uncontrolled expressions of the kind of afflictive emotions like anger, jealousy, hatred. However, the teachings warn us that pushing away or ignoring our emotions is not sustainable. Suppressing or giving rein to our emotions both lead to deep suffering. So these Lojong teachings actually take a third approach of how to work with our emotional lives. So rather than getting swept up in our emotions or pushing them away, we're called upon to simply acknowledge them and then let them go. And letting go doesn't mean forcing our will on our emotions, kind of kicking them out the door somehow. We all know how well that works. And nor does letting go mean kind of feigning that we are somehow beyond the emotions, like we kind of try to ignore them. I think rather the Lojong teachings really encourage us to take responsibility for our emotions by committing ourselves to be aware when emotions arise, to feel their presence in the body, pleasant or unpleasant, and to restrain from habitual reactions, lashing out, for example. And finally, to replace our habitual reaction with some compassionate, open, and fully aware response. And this takes great courage. But it does also provide us with a great freedom, because we have the power then to transform our own emotional experience. And maybe not right away, because there is no kind of, I think, magic that can turn this around instantly. But through the committed training, the committed practice, using the Lojong teachings, we develop a new relationship with our emotions. So emotions in the Buddhist tradition are not good or bad in and of themselves. But when you're swept away by a strong emotional wave, you need to ask yourself, who am I? Who am I? Am I just that emotion? The Lojong teachings open us to a more inclusive view, one where emotions are less prominent in our sense of who we are. We come to understand that yes, emotions are part of my experience, but they're not the totality of me, even in their strongest form. Now, last week, Kate took up the very powerful slogan, as it's written in Norman's book that we've been using, this training in compassion. I'll come back to that in just a moment here. The slogan, drive all blames into one. And she explored it in some depth. And Kate came up with an altered wording that I really like. It was melt all blames into one. And if you missed last week, I really recommend that you listen to the talk from our website. And you'll find also there all the other sessions as well. They're posted there. So, let's move on then to the next slogan. And again, just we're using Norman's book that we've talked about before, so I won't go into that. It's kind of a nice foundation. Oops, nice foundation for us to look at and to read. And I highly recommend you read this if you haven't already. The next point in Norman's book is titled Make Practice Your Whole Life. Make practice your whole life. And under this point, there are two slogans. Cultivate a serious attitude. Mm-hmm. And practice for death as well as life. Make practice your whole life. You know, really, that's the essence of our Zen practice. In a traditional Zen monastery, from the moment you wake up in the morning until you go to sleep at night, every moment is treated as a valuable moment to practice. For example, in traditional monasteries, they make great use of gathas, or short verses of reflection. And these are recited, for example, before we put on the okesa, or the rakusu, Buddha's robe, before eating meals, before brushing teeth, before taking a bath, even before going to the toilet. There are many gathas that are memorized and then recited. And of course, all work and all meals are carefully and mindfully done. Cooking the meal mindfully, eating the meal mindfully. And there are various rituals, you know, services that are performed throughout the day. Some long, some short, but again, that emphasis on making one's whole life practice. Now, for us as kind of people living in the world, I think we too can bring that same spirit to our everyday activities. The spirit of gratitude, the spirit of mindfulness, kindness, and humility. And we too can make skillful use of gathas. Kate and I have talked about gathas in earlier talks. I don't think we've talked about them too recently. But maybe you're familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh, the famed Vietnamese Zen teacher. He created many helpful gathas, and you can find them easily online. But here's one I remember from a stay at Green Gulch Farm down in Marin County in California. And this one was to be recited whenever we turned on the bathroom tap to wash our hands. And as I remember it, it went like this. Water comes from high mountain sources. Water runs deep in the earth. Miraculously, water comes to us and sustains all life. Every time I washed my hands in that bathroom that was posted near the taps to be recited, lovely practice. So how can you make practice your whole life? And really, what is not practice in your life right now? I think these are two really important questions for us to consider, especially at this time, when our life, at least for many of us, is kind of topsy-turvy. What is not practice in your life right now? So that's the main point. And then under that point, as I said earlier, there are two slogans. And the first slogan is cultivate a serious attitude. Or more traditionally, practice the five strengths. Let me just read you a little quote from Norman to kind of start us off on this one. Norman writes, "Probably our biggest challenge in spiritual practice is not that we don't have the time or the talent or the focus or the right atmosphere or setting. Probably the biggest challenge is simply that we don't take ourselves seriously enough." Let me read that one more time. I think it's important for us to think about. Probably our biggest challenge in spiritual practice is not that we don't have enough time or the talent or the focus or the right atmosphere or the right setting. Probably the biggest challenge is simply we don't take ourselves seriously enough. Somehow, we don't think it's possible for us. And this slogan, cultivate a serious attitude, or more traditionally, practice the five strengths, is really all about remembering and strengthening our resolve to practice, to open beyond our kind of habitual self-centeredness. Now, under this slogan, there are five subpoints, which, you know, actually, I think it's kind of cheating. After all, there are 59 slogans. Couldn't they have worked the five in there, simply, you know, knocked off of some other five? So they're kind of sneaking in several more on us this way. And it doesn't quite seem fair, but here we go. So the five are, let me just say them quickly, and then we'll look at each one a little bit. Strong determination, familiarization, seed of virtue, reproach, aspiration. So let's kind of briefly just kind of consider each one. Strong determination refers to cultivating our deep intention. We ask ourselves, what are we doing with our lives? What is most important? What is most important? Often at the beginning of a session or a longer retreat, I encourage all of us who are practicing there to reflect on why we are there, why we are attending this session or this retreat. I think it's important because when we acknowledge and reaffirm our deepest intentions, it will help keep us going. Help us keep us going over the long haul, especially when we hit a bump along the way. So perhaps you can ask yourself right now or throughout the week, what is it that I hold most dear? How do I want to live this life? Maybe you can reframe it too and ask, what can I offer my loved ones? What can I offer this world? Please cultivate a strong determination. Write down what comes to you when you reflect on those questions. Please keep it nearby. So the second one is familiarization, which basically means practice, 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 practice. Just as we do in our Zazen practice by returning to the breath over and over and over again, every time the mind wanders off, which, you know, happens hundreds of times within 20 minutes, it seems, we are instructed by this slogan to return to mindfulness and compassion using the slogans. In other words, let mindfulness and compassion be as familiar to you as your own hands, as automatic as brushing your teeth before bed. We return to mindfulness and compassion. So the third one, seed of virtue. I kind of wondered what on earth that may mean, seed of virtue, for a long time. And I think it refers, to use a more kind of term that perhaps we're familiar with our Buddha nature. The Buddha nature that is within us all. And actually, I think this is key. This is so important to remember, to to bring forward over and over again. Because it's so easy for us to fall into the opposite, all our failings and troubles. So yes, at times you are a mess. You lash out perhaps in anger or say something thoughtless or cruel. But regardless, you know, we are all also boundless and radiant. Hongzhi, one of our great Chinese Zen ancestors, he put it like this. He writes, "When the stains from old habits are exhausted, the original light appears, blazing through your skull, not admitting any other matters, vast and spacious, like sky and water merging during autumn, like snow and moon having the same color. This field is without boundary, beyond direction, magnificently one entity without edge or seam." That's Hongzhi's description of our true nature. Now you may think, Hongzhi was a great sage. He lived a long time ago, and obviously he was many lifetimes beyond where I am right now in terms of practice and realization understanding. What does he have to say to me? How can I compare myself to Hongzhi? Well, let me just read you a little snippet again from Norman, in case that thought has arisen in your mind, as it has in mind at various points. And Norman writes this, "The virtue of our great saints and spiritual exemplars the world over is not to set up their supposedly perfection as a reproach to us. It is the opposite. Their example shows us what we could be and what we are. To practice seed of virtue is to remind ourselves every day of who we really are. None of the world's great spiritual exemplars has ever said, 'Look at me, how great I am, pay attention to me.' All have said, 'I am what you are.'" What are you? Hongzhi says, "Without boundary, beyond direction, magnificently one entity without edge or seam." So we need to remember this too, that we are part of this great heritage that in our tradition we call Buddha nature. And maybe I can't see it clearly right now. Maybe I'm caught up in some discursive thought or anxiety. But I know I am more. So then the next one is reproach. And it's a word I have and still find rather problematic. I really wonder what the Tibetan said. But the understanding is that we need to acknowledge our faults and old habits to see clearly the suffering that these cause and to see how they keep us from deepening compassion and kindness. So acknowledging our old habits, we then understand them as simply part of our past conditioning, habitual habits that we fall into. But they are not who we are. Norman has often said, you know, around this, it's important to realize it's not our fault, but it's our responsibility. That these habitual patterns, these ways that we respond, are not our fault. These kind of conditionings and many causes have led to them developing within us, but they're our responsibility. We need to see them, understand them, and work with them so they don't cause more harm. And Norman, in his book, suggests, you know, we can scold our old habits. Telling this past conditioning to get lost. And he writes something kind of funny there, which I'll let you read. But another practice from early Buddhism, when this arises, is to say to oneself, this is not mine. I am not that. This is not myself. And I have picked up this practice, and I find it really helpful. A little distance between a strong emotion, perhaps, allows me to become more mindful. Now, this is not mine. I am not that. This is not myself. So the last one in this list of five is aspiration. And aspiration, I would interpret this as really a really clear articulation of our vows, both the great vows and personal vows. So in our tradition, of course, I think you're all familiar with the great Bodhisattva vows that we chant quite often. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. And Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. But aspiration is your vision, your dedication. In the Buddhist tradition, of course, the aspiration is to awaken for the benefit of all beings. We commit ourselves to the service of others. We commit ourselves to the cultivation of mindfulness and compassion, no matter what obstacles arise. That's our collective aspiration, I think, with as people who practice in the Buddhist tradition. But really, I believe we also need to clarify our own personal aspiration. What are you dedicating your life to? How are you, in your unique way, offering your life to this world? What suffering do you see around you that you dedicate yourself to relieving in some way? You know, one famous example of this was the American Zen teacher, Bernie Glassman, who dedicated himself to ending homelessness. And of course, he didn't. But it didn't matter. He offered much of his life and accomplished much of his life towards ending homelessness. What is your aspiration? What is your deepest vow? So that's kind of a quick thumbnail look at those five sub-points under that slogan. So the second slogan in this section is practice for death as well as life. Dogen Zenji, the Japanese monk who brought our form of practice from China to Japan in the 1200s, wrote in his great work, the Shobogenzo, a fascicle called Shoji, Birth and Death. And in there, there's this sentence that I find very moving. Life and death is the precious life of Buddha. For human beings, clarifying the reality of life and death is the great matter. Oh, there's so much, you know, we could say about this practice for death. And Norman writes in this section that death is not separate from life. And so it behooves us to include the great fact of impermanence, perhaps we could say the great impermanence of our life, which is death, in our practice. And how do we do this? Well, there are many ways, many practices within the tradition, and we don't have time to explore them in any depth here. But one famous one that I'll mention is the Maranasati practice. And you can find this online, Maranasati, M-A-R-A-N-A, Sati, S-A-T-I. And it's simply a set of, well, we could almost say like slogans again, reminding us that death is inevitable. We don't know the time of death. We do not know for most of us, we do not know how we will die, etc. And we reflect on that. We meditate on that. Another practice that very similar is known as the Five Remembrances. And maybe some of you are really familiar with those too. And let me just recite those and then we'll close. I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape having ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separate from them. My deeds are my closest companions. I am the beneficiary of my deeds. My deeds are the ground on which I stand. So these are known as the five reflections, and you can find those on a line as well, very easily. Well, when I first looked at this little chapter in Norman's book, I thought, well, there's only two slogans here. How am I going to fill a talk on two slogans? But so much to say, eh? So much we can practice with. So now I'd like to give you guys a chance to talk with each other a little bit. And I'll put you in breakout rooms in just a moment. But I'd like you, here's the question. Think about your average day, how you spend your time, what you do. And reflect for a moment, how much of your activity each day is mindful? How much is really concerned with kindness or compassion? Consider that for a few moments. And then think about how can you make practice, make your practice to touch all of your life? How can practice touch all of your life? What can you do? So, quick summary again. Think about how you spend your day, your average day, your time. How much of your activity is really mindful and kind of concerned with kindness and compassion. And then how may you open your practice, develop practice to really allow it to touch all of your life. And if that doesn't quite seem to sit well or nothing seems to come, please feel free to talk about whatever has inspired you perhaps or you'd like to mention that stood out for you during the talk. So I'll put you in groups and again, each person will have about 3 minutes. You'll need to self-time. And when you get in a group, just please introduce yourselves to each other and then one person go ahead and start. And after about 10 minutes, I'll bring you all back. I think we're all familiar with the procedure now to hear and then we'll kind of just do a round of names, say where we are, and wish each other well. Okay, so let's see, I'll put you now. There we go. See everyone in 10.
Move ourselves over.
Yeah. This way, a second, they're still disappearing on me. So I'll make sure they...
I'll get there.
I'll get there. He's frozen somehow, but let's move it. Then. Oh, there he got. He went. Good.